The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours. I hope you all will join me on this journey. You can find me at Primetime Crime, wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Perplexity.
On Thanksgiving Eve, November 24th, 1971, a Northwest flight was commandeered by a man wearing sunglasses, a suit, and carrying a simple briefcase. He became a legend after he parachuted out of the plane and he took $200,000. He was never seen again. He was later labeled the most clever and bold airplane hijacker of all time. We have just passed the 50th anniversary of the only unsolved airplane hijacking crime to date. So what happened to this guy? Who was he? And why did he never get caught? This is the story of D.B. Cooper. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would absolutely love it if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends. Welcome back. So happy you're here. I have an awesome story for you guys today. The story of D.B. Cooper is one of the most iconic, famous mysteries of all time. If you are a mystery lover and you don't know the story of D.B. Cooper, you're gonna learn it today. But this is a big one, and I hope I do it justice. It's such a big story. There's so much we could get into. I do want to recommend, if you guys want a much deeper dive into the story, I came across a four-hour kind of mini series from Crime Weekly. It's like a deep dive two-part episode. They go way more in depth about D.B. Cooper, more in depth than what we will have time for today, but just wanted to recommend that because they did a great job if you want to learn more. And I also wanted to shout out my patron, a member of the Perplexed Society, Claire. Thank you, Claire, for requesting this story. It was so much fun to learn about and super excited to get into it. Just want to remind everybody really quickly, if you have not done so yet, please tell a couple of friends, family about the show. It really helps spread the word and get new listeners. Leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. That really, really helps. If you want to support the show and get early and ad-free episodes, unlock about 60 episodes of bonus content. Go check out patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Trigger warning, as always, for today's episode. This podcast isn't for children. Listener discretion is advised, and all the sources that were used for today's episode will be available down in the show notes. So without further ado, let's get into this iconic, insane mystery, the only unsolved airplane hijacking to date, the story of DB Cooper. On November 24th, 1971, a plane departing from Portland to Seattle, Northwest Orient Flight 305, a Boeing 727, takes off at 2:50 p.m. The flight had a crew of 6 people and 36 passengers. Bill Mitchell, a passenger of Northwest Orient Flight 305, was a sophomore at University of Oregon. He takes his 37-minute flight on a partially cloudy day and takes his seat in the back left of the plane. After takeoff, he noticed the guy next to him in seat 18E. This guy was wearing sunglasses, a suit, and carrying a simple briefcase. He ordered a bourbon and a 7-Up, and right after takeoff, he lit a cigarette. Because remember, you could do that in the 70s. He quickly passes a note to one of the stewardesses. This was 23-year-old Florence Schaffner. And at first, Florence is like, oh my God, whatever, and just drops the note in her purse, ignoring it, because she had probably already gotten 10 other notes that day from other male passengers, as it was very common for stewardesses to be over-sexualized. But this man was insistent and told the stewardess, "Miss, you better take a look at that note. I have a bomb." So, of course, after this, she freaks out and starts opening this note, and written in all capital letters with a felt-tip pen, she reads, "Miss, I have a bomb in my briefcase, and I want you to sit by me." So Florence complies and sits down next to this mysterious man. She discreetly asks if she can see the bomb. She doesn't want to panic any of the other passengers. So this man then opens his briefcase, and Florence would later say she remembered seeing a big battery with 6 dynamite sticks wrapped around it. The man said, quote, "All I have to do is attach this wire to this gadget here, and we will all be dead." Meanwhile, this other passenger that has been looking at this man, Bill Mitchell, notices the stewardess and how she's going back and forth between this mysterious man and the front of the plane, and she's acting very strange. Mitchell's trying to figure out what's going on, and the hijacker would tell the stewardess his demands. Florence carefully took down each demand from the man, writing it with pen and paper. She then brought the note to the cockpit. This man was asking for $200,000 in 10,000 unmarked $20 bills in American currency, which would equivocate to about $1.5 million today. He also asked that this money be placed in a knapsack and that he also be provided with 4 parachutes. So one of the big mysteries is, why did he ask for 4? But a lot of people think this is so they couldn't dummy him up and give him a bad parachute. By ordering 4 parachutes, this implies that he would be taking a hostage, and so they would have no other choice but to give him working parachutes, which I've got to say is very smart. So throughout this entire plane hijacking, the man remains very calm. He was later described as, quote, "not nervous. He seemed rather nice and was not cruel or nasty." He also seemed familiar with the terrain. He kept looking out of the window during the flight, and at one point he made a couple of remarks saying things like, "It looks like Tacoma down there." He also asked if the stewardess smoked and offered her a cigarette. So while all of this is going on, the pilot isn't sure if it's safe to land, so the plane is circling around for hours, giving Seattle PD and the FBI time to get together the man's demands. They would also carefully photograph the money on microfilm. The night became dark and stormy. Once DB Cooper was guaranteed his demands would be met, the plane landed in Seattle after being in the air for about 3.5 hours. Snipers were carefully watching the plane, and DB Cooper would ask the stewardess to shut all the windows of the plane. One of the stewardesses would then exit the plane to collect the $200,000, which was given from Seattle banks. She returned with the cash and the four parachutes, as Cooper had requested. She also gave him printed instructions for how to use the parachutes, but he insisted this was not necessary. He also complained the money was in a cloth bag instead of a knapsack, like he had requested. So now he had to figure out a new way to transport the money. Using a pocket knife, he cut the canopy from one of the reserve parachutes, and he actually stuffed the money into an empty parachute bag. None of the passengers or crew were harmed during this plane jacking. After the plane had safely landed and Cooper gets his money, all the passengers are exiting the plane, and they were taken straight back to the airport. The passengers were completely perplexed as they had no idea what was happening. They had only been told that their flight would be delayed because of a minor mechanical difficulty. It wasn't until after they landed that they found out what had actually happened, including Bill Mitchell, the passenger that was sitting near DB Cooper. He would later say he had no clue he was sitting next to a bomb. So you may be wondering, in this day and age, how this could happen, how someone could get away with this. It can be hard to visualize with how secure airports are today. But you have to remember, this was well before metal detectors, taking off your shoes, TSA, and random selections. Airport security was virtually non-existent in the 70s. It wouldn't be until after this event that there were upgrades to airport security measures, including Boeing 727s being retrofitted with what they called Cooper vanes, which prevented aft staircases from being lowered during a flight, because this is how Cooper would make his escape when he was back in the air. So, the hijacked plane was then refueled, and it was headed for Reno. The plan was that the plane would stop for refueling in Reno, then it would head to Mexico City. The pilot and some stewardesses remained on board after being given the option by the hijacker to stay or go. To lighten the mood, one of the stewardesses made jokes with the man, asking if she could have some of the money. And the man readily agreed. He actually tried to hand her a packet of the bills, but she said it was against company policy. He also later tried to tip several of the flight attendants for their troubles. He instructed the pilot to fly with the flaps of the plane down at minimum height and to make the plane go 250 miles per hour at a maximum height of 10,000 feet. And the pilot is very confused. He was certain that the plane was not capable of doing this, but DB Cooper was confident, assuring him, "It can be done, do it." And sure enough, he was right. The plane flew south over an area known as the Dark Divide. He sat in the back of the plane alone, and meanwhile, unbeknownst to Cooper, three planes, two fighters from an Air Force base, and a Lockheed T-33 trainer would follow the plane. Eventually, the crew began to notice their ears were popping around 8:12 p.m., which was about 30 minutes after their second takeoff. The pressure in the cabin had changed. The aft stairs had gone down. And just like that, late at night, from thousands of feet up in the air, in complete darkness, this mysterious man, later labeled DB Cooper, would leap from the plane, vanish, and he would never be seen again. No one ever found his body, the briefcase, the bomb, or the parachute. So we don't even know if the bomb was real. The flight crew would later land safely. As the FBI investigated this crime, later calling it NORJAC, or the Northwest Hijacking, they found the man had casually bought his ticket the same day as the event with cash, under the name Dan Cooper. The man was described as being a white male with an olive complexion in his mid-40s, standing at around 6'1" and weighing around 170 to 175 pounds. He had dark hair and brown eyes. He wore a black or dark brown business suit, a white shirt, a thin black tie, a black raincoat, and brown shoes. In the media, the man's alias was accidentally given as DB Cooper after a couple reporters messed up, and the name stuck. Helicopters and hundreds of troops began to search for the man, but they weren't exactly sure where the plane had been when D.B. Cooper made his exit. At first, it was believed he landed somewhere in Reno, but once that search and those leads dried up, it was believed he landed somewhere between Seattle and Portland. He would go on to develop quite a reputation. People were comparing him to Jesse James. Some people even called him a folk hero. He was seen as this underdog, sticking it to the man. People were rooting for this guy. They were writing songs, selling t-shirts, there were movies made, and Unsolved Mysteries even covered the case. The FBI would go on to conduct countless interviews and look at more than 1,000 suspects, with some being quite compelling, but none could definitively be tied to the crime. So at this point in the episode, we are going to get into some suspects, but before we do, I just want to preface this by saying this is where people can get a little heated. There's a lot of arguments about who D.B. Cooper was and a lot of strong opinions about how it's no way it's this one guy. So I'm just giving you the information. A lot of people on Reddit seem to think that it is none of the people we are about to talk about. But there's definitely some interesting things that come up, and it is controversial, like I said, but a lot of people think it could have been Richard McCoy Jr., so we are going to talk about him first. See if this sounds familiar to the crime I just told you. On April 7th, 1972, a man boarded a Newark to LA flight under a fake name. Just after takeoff, he handed a note to a flight attendant demanding $500,000 and 4 parachutes. He also stated he would bomb the plane if his demands were not met. The 727 landed, refueled, and the hijacker got his cash and parachutes, then later jumped the rear stairs. This man was later identified as Richard McCoy Jr. It's quite obvious this crime is incredibly similar to the one that D.B. Cooper had committed, though it was 5 months prior, so he could have just been copying D.B. Cooper. But we do know that McCoy Jr., regardless of if he's connected to D.B. Cooper or not, was later convicted of air piracy for this crime, and he was sentenced to 45 years. But on August 10th, 1974, he made a break for it. He and some other inmates hijacked a garbage truck, and they managed to escape for 3 months. He was later killed in a shootout with the FBI. What's interesting about all of this is that McCoy's kids have long believed their father could have been D.B. Cooper. In 2024, they handed a parachute and a harness over to the FBI that had been stashed in a storage shed on their family property in North Carolina. So this was a very recent development. I thought this would be a good thing to talk about in this case. The parachute has caused a lot of controversy. With the parachute, there was also a logbook that McCoy's daughter says puts her father in the area at the time of the 1971 D.B. Cooper hijacking. They kept this secret until after their mother passed away. But their mother did say before her death that she believed her husband would have been furious if he never, quote, got the credit he deserved for executing the crimes. Gotta say, it's a little juicy. According to an article from The Sun in March 2024, one of the McCoy's sons provided DNA to the FBI, but never heard anything back. So the thing with McCoy Jr. is obviously he committed a very similar crime and was convicted for it. And then they're able to put him in the area at the time this happened. There's also some experts that analyzed the parachute that was found in the family shed that belonged to McCoy. They said that this parachute was like finding a needle in a haystack, like one in a million. It's the same kind of parachute that was used in the D.B. Cooper crime. So the next suspect we are going to talk about is Dick Briggs. Tom Colbert, author of The Last Master Outlaw, has been tackling this cold case of D.B. Cooper for many years. His investigation started after a close friend of his gave him a phone call. The friend had heard through the grapevine that there was someone in Nevada named Ron Carlson who knew who D.B. Cooper was. Ron Carlson was also willing to go on record and take a lie detector test.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
So in 1978, Ron Carlson had been selling drugs up and down the West Coast when he met who he believes was D.B. Cooper. This man was Dick Briggs, and he was Carlson's cocaine supplier. Briggs actually proclaimed to be D.B. Cooper. At a party in 1980, he told Carlson some acquaintances at the party, a couple that he specifically pointed out, would be coming across some of his stolen money on a beach. And sure enough, just a few days later, the money was found. A few days after the party, Ron Carlson saw a news alert that $5,800 worth of rotting $20 bills had been found on a local beach. And the couple that found the money was the exact couple Carlson had seen at the party. The couple had an 8-year-old boy, and he was the one who came across the partially buried money in the sand on the shore of the Columbia River. The serial numbers on the cash were found to match those from the stash given to D.B. Cooper in 1971. So, could Dick Briggs have planted the money on the beach? He also claimed he had worked in special forces in the Vietnam War. He was an accomplished parachutist, familiar with the area, and he was highly intelligent. He was also known to have anger issues and be kind of scary. He once took a straight shot of bourbon, then proceeded to eat the glass, blood dripping down his face. He would perform strange parlor tricks, taking a woman's hairpin out of her hair and sticking it through his arm and pulling it back out, drawing no blood. He had a huge ego. And if you look at pictures of him, he does share some similarities to the infamous sketch of D.B. Cooper. So when Tom Colbert is investigating the D.B. Cooper mystery and he realizes Dick Briggs, D.B., could be D.B. Cooper, he started to document everything and he made plans to create a documentary. Ron Carlson was interviewed 3 separate times, including one time under a lie detector. The FBI also got involved. Jack Tremarco, an expert polygrapher, assisted them. They concluded that Ron Carlson was telling the truth. So regardless of if Ron Carlson was telling the truth or not, he seems to believe that Dick Briggs is D.B. Cooper. But one day, Tom Colbert got word that Dick Briggs had died mysteriously in a car accident at the age of 41. The accident was in an isolated area of Portland. His friends believed he was murdered. So Tom Colbert continued to dig for years, and he found out Briggs had never gone to Vietnam. He also could not parachute. He was a part-time weekend warrior for the Air Force. He was short, stocky, muscular, and didn't really fit the body build of D.B. Cooper. So, a lot of people think this was a false confession. But Colbert kept digging, and he found out Dick Briggs had a friend named Robert Rackstraw, which brings us to our third suspect. Rackstraw was a Green Beret with parachute training, and his picture was almost identical to the sketch of D.B. Cooper. He had multiple fake identities and criminal titles. He was interviewed a lot. He was often asked if he was D.B. Cooper, and whether it be because he wanted to be cool and mysterious or not, it's weird that he would never give a straightforward answer. They would always be like, are you D.B. Cooper? And he'd be like, have you guys seen the weather forecast recently? Rackstraw had a history of committing grand theft. He wrote $75,000 worth of bad checks. And it's also possible he murdered his own stepfather, allegedly. After being acquitted of the murder charge, Rackstraw faked his own death in 1978, logging a fake Mayday call from a rented plane in Northern California. He then spent 2 years in prison for check fraud and aircraft theft. Rackstraw later died in 2019 from a heart condition. Authors like Thomas Colbert and Tom Zalosi have presented evidence from their 5-year investigation and concluded Rackstraw must have been D.B. Cooper. Rackstraw was also 28 years old at the time. He had light-colored eyes, and the flight attendants that described D.B. Cooper were in their early 20s. No woman in their early 20s would mistake a man a few years older than them to be in his mid-40s, like they said D.B. Cooper was. Then we get to our next suspect, Kenneth Christensen. Kenneth Christensen had worked for Northwest as a mechanic, flight attendant, and purser. His brother Lyle would later claim, when he was on his deathbed in 1994, that he told Lyle, quote, "There's something you should know, but I cannot tell you." Christensen had a background as a military paratrooper, and 1 year after the D.B. Cooper hijacking, he bought a house in cash despite having a very modest flight attendant salary. There's also Sheridan Peterson, who was suspected within the same week of the crime, but was not actually sat down and interviewed by the FBI until decades later. Sheridan Peterson was a former Boeing employee, and he had worked in the department that wrote the manual for the Boeing 727 jet, the same kind of plane that D.B. Cooper hijacked. He was also a very accomplished skydiver and worked at the Issaquah Skydiving Center in the early 60s, the same place that later would provide the parachutes to D.B. Cooper for his escape. But people have argued that there's no way it could have been Sheridan Peterson because he had blue eyes, not brown. But my whole thing is, people do eyewitness accounts and get them wrong all the time. Our memory is known to try to fill in gaps. And he had sunglasses on for pretty much all of the flight. Sheridan Peterson was also known to not be a smoker, and we know that D.B. Cooper was basically chain smoking on the whole flight. But I mean, you could also argue he was kind of in a stressful situation. I've never smoked a cigarette myself, but if I was hijacking, theoretically, a plane, I would probably smoke a cigarette too. Then we get to Vince Peterson, not to be confused with Sheridan Peterson, who we just talked about. In 2024, a D.B. Cooper case sleuther named Eric Ulis, who had been trying to solve the case for over a decade, obtained a device to test D.B. Cooper's tie for DNA, because he had been wearing a little clip-on tie when he hijacked the plane. It's believed that this device can capture DNA with a certainty of 100%. Ulis hopes that they can build a genetic profile and compare it to other suspects. In 2023, Ulis actually sued the FBI, hoping to gain access to the tie, but the case was dismissed. And I'm just going to preface this by saying I don't really understand the science of how this works. So I'm going to explain this as best as I can. I apologize if I don't explain it well to any scientists that are listening to this. Microscopic evidence on the tie in 2013 pointed to rare specialty metals from an aerospace sector. This was also traced to a facility in Pittsburgh called Crucible Steel, where a man named Vince Peterson worked. Peterson became a suspect. He would have been 52 years old at the time of the hijacking, and he died in 2002. His daughter has handed over Vince's DNA to the FBI, hoping to rule him out, because she doesn't believe he would have done something like this. Vince Peterson could have been arguably around the age of D.B. Cooper, though they did describe him to be in his 40s. Vince was also a very clean-cut guy, roughly 6'2", with an olive complexion, but he had blue eyes. Vince Peterson also routinely traveled to Seattle to work with Boeing on aviation projects, so he would have obviously been very familiar with how those planes worked. Vince Peterson's daughter, Julie Dunbar, has also called for the tie to be released so that Ulysse, the sleuther, can analyze it more. The tie has been tested for DNA multiple times. It was tested in 2001 and investigators were able to get a partial DNA profile, but the sample was inconclusive. It was then tested again in 2009 and 2011, but as far as we know, nothing has come from this. There is another suspect named Milton Vordal. Ryan Burns, a Ridgeland-based criminal defense attorney and amateur sleuths, have developed another suspect, Milton Vordal, more recently in 2022. Ryan Burns describes Vordal as a mad scientist type who held a number of patents and worked on the Manhattan Project. He also helped develop the Fat Man bomb that decimated Nagasaki during World War II. Vordal passed away, like a lot of these other suspects, in 2002, so we don't ever really get to hear his side of the story, but Ryan Burns and his associates have worked to put together an itemized list of over 100,000 microscopic particles found on the discarded clip-on tie that Cooper was wearing when he boarded the plane. So similar to this other sleuther that was looking at Vince Peterson, we have this other guy who, once again, everyone wants to look at the tie. The tie was examined by an electron microscope by the McCrone Associates of Chicago. Three of the 100,000 particles recorded, quote, stuck out like a sore thumb to the team. An alloy with a unique combination of titanium and antimony known as TISB. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's capital T, lowercase I, capital S, lowercase B. The particle TISB alloy that they found was developed by a Pittsburgh firm called Rim Crew that worked closely with the Air Force and commercial air industry. Though the alloy was never mass-produced commercially, it never left the lab, meaning that the only people who could have had those particles wear off somewhere would have had to have been in the lab at one point. All patents produced that featured this alloy led back to Milton Vordal. Vordal would have been in his late 50s at the time of the hijacking and lived in the Pacific Northwest. He fits the height of D.B. Cooper, and at first they thought he could have been too old as a suspect, and Cooper, like I said, was believed to be in his, like, younger 40s. But then the words of Bill Mitchell, that passenger that was sitting close to D.B. Cooper, came to mind. A lot of people say that Bill Mitchell was jealous of all of the attention that D.B. Cooper was receiving from the attractive stewardesses, and dismissively, he described him as a geeky old man. The initial estimate of a flight attendant that interacted with Cooper put him in Vordal's age range. He also has a pronounced lower lip, which is a key feature of all the D.B. Cooper descriptions. And they do look a lot alike if you look at a side-by-side photo of the D.B. Cooper sketch and Vordal. Burns also spoke with several living relatives of Vordal who have not discounted this theory. While all of these suspects are well known, I want to again point out that they're very controversial. A lot of internet sleuths seem to be of the suspicion that whoever D.B. Cooper actually was is likely not any of the suspects we just discussed. Most sleuths believe D.B. Cooper would have been smart enough to likely have never been a suspect. He likely never talked to the FBI. He fell under the radar, didn't have any kind of significant criminal history, and was probably never investigated. Now, I don't know if I believe that, but these sleuths have been at it a lot longer than me, so who knows? So let's talk about some other significant events and theories that have happened since the D.B. Cooper incident. On April 23rd, 2013, Earl J. Cossey, the man who packed the four parachutes that were later given to D.B. Cooper, was found murdered in his home in Woodinville, Washington. The murder was never solved, Some allege a possible connection to the D.B. Cooper case. But according to authorities, there's no reason to suspect a link. They say the murder most likely was motivated by burglary. There have also been some updates with the FBI's investigation, and they've presented some different theories. The FBI basically speculates that Cooper did not survive the jump due to inclement weather, lack of proper skydiving equipment, and the rough terrain where he would have landed. Additionally, while many people say Cooper was likely an experienced skydiver, the FBI claims anyone who was experienced would have never been crazy enough to jump in the pitch black in the rain, going 200 miles an hour, wearing nothing more than loafers and a trench coat. It is also believed by the FBI that this was not a group heist. Cooper acted alone. If he had worked with an accomplice, he would have likely requested a much more specific flight path rather than just saying, fly to Mexico. However, just things to think about, D.B. Cooper was the last person on that plane to buy a ticket. He was one of the last people to board the plane. And yet he was able to get the exact seat he wanted in the rear of the plane. He also pulled one of the biggest and the only unsolved plane hijacking in history. It would have been much easier to pull it off if he had help somewhere along the way. Cooper also took his ransom note back from the flight attendant, so it could never be examined by authorities. However, he did leave behind cigarette butts, a hair on the headrest of his seat, and his clip-on necktie. No fingerprints were found, but obviously we could get some DNA from all these things, right? As for the money, it was concluded by the FBI that it never went into circulation. In July of 2016, the FBI officially suspended their active investigation. But after the parachute was found in the McCoy family shed, the FBI reopened the case. According to trusted sources, the FBI is now searching for a positive DNA connection between McCoy's DNA and the Cooper DNA left on the aircraft. So we may never know who pulled off the only unsolved air hijacking in history, but one cannot deny this case is absolutely fascinating, and I've got to say, this crime is quite impressive and perplexing. And that is the famous story of D.B. Cooper, the only unsolved airplane hijacking to date. I want to say thank you again to Claire for requesting this story. It was really interesting to learn about. I really don't know what to believe. There's random little facts from each of the suspects we talked about where I'm like, okay, that's pretty convincing. Like, what are the chances that this guy's involved or not involved? I'm too stupid to understand the science particles thing, but that sounds significant. And then you have the whole one in a million parachute thing found in McCoy Jr.'s family shed. But then there's all these people on the internet that are like, no, you idiot, it can't be him. So I think I'm more confused about who D.B. Cooper was now that I've researched it than I was before I hadn't researched it. But it's still lots of fun, and I mean, just an iconic mystery. And it's a little more lighthearted. Like, he didn't hurt anyone, you know? A lot of the stewardesses said he was a really nice guy. Claire is a patron, so her request did get bumped up to the front of the queue. I have a lot more listener requests coming, including one that I have already researched and written up. That is going to be coming next week, likely in two parts because it's a true crime deep dive. But if you have a topic request, send it to me at perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. And just a reminder again, if you have not done so yet, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube and you liked this story, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give this video a like, and drop a comment down below telling me your thoughts. Who do you think D.B. Cooper was? What are your theories? I would love to hear them because, like I said, I'm very confused. And if you would like to support this small independent podcast, if you want early ad-free episodes, if you want exclusive bonus content and a community, go check out the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. If you're not sure if it's right for you, check out a 7-day free trial that's available for any of my tiers. You also get a letter from me, some stickers. You can get some merch depending on what tier you join, and I would love to have you over there. And that wraps up today's episode about D.B. Cooper. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week and stay safe, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast. Hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brannon. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to support. Have a topic request or a perplexing story of your own you'd like to share? Send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show further and unlock exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Perplexity merch and additional support links can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.